Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Brian Lynn, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Zimbabwe's Tererai Trent became famous in the United States after appearing on the Oprah Winfrey Show in 2009. On the television program, she explained how she overcame great difficulties to get an education. Now, Trent finds herself honored with a bronze statue near one of Oprah Winfrey in New York City. She is reported to be the only African woman to have received this honor. The lifelike statue is one of 10 Statues for Equality created by sculptors Gilly and Mark Shatner. Trent's statue shows her with arms raised, surrounded by the flame lily, Zimbabwe's national flower. Gilly Shatner spoke recently at a ceremony for the 10 statues. She said, "It comes without saying that by projecting these women into larger-than-life-size sculptures, it will change our society, a change that will elevate the lives of women all around the world." Trent was denied an education in her village because she was a girl. She secretly learned to read by using her brother's books. She was married when she was only 11. She says that her husband abused her. But Trent did not let her dreams die. She moved to the United States and continued her education. She earned a doctoral degree after 20 years of effort. She taught at Drexel University in Pennsylvania and currently heads the Tererai Trent International Foundation. The group works to provide education to children in rural Zimbabwe. Beatrice Nyamwida is Trent's friend of more than 35 years. She traveled from Zimbabwe to New York to attend the ceremony. She said, "Trent's influence is felt back home in communities where not everyone has an opportunity to get an education." Nyamwida added, "There are 10 children who went to her school and started studying at the university currently. She has changed the lives of these children who are bright but lack resources. I am proud of her for that." Trent said that what makes her happiest is passing along opportunities she received to others. She said she made a decision to end the poverty and oppression that held back the women in her family for generations.
Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam says her government plans to officially withdraw a bill that critics say would harm the territory's special legal status. Lam announced the decision in a videotaped message that her office released on Wednesday. Opposition to the extradition bill has fueled 3 months of often violent protests in Hong Kong. If it were to become law, the measure would have permitted criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial in courts controlled by the Communist Party. After large demonstrations in the Chinese-controlled territory earlier this year, Lam suspended the measure in June, but did not withdraw it. The Hong Kong chief now has formally withdrawn the proposed law. The move meets one of five demands made by the protesters. Other demands include an independent investigation of reports that some police officers brutally attacked demonstrators. Another is for Hong Kongers to have more freedom when choosing their own leaders. Hong Kong, a British territory until 1997, returned to mainland Chinese control under the One Country, Two Systems understanding. The deal permitted Hong Kong to keep its special legal status for at least 50 years after the handover. The unrest since June has interfered with everyday life in the city. Protesters have launched demonstrations on public transportation, causing subway train delays and closing the airport for nearly 2 days. The Reuters news agency reports that more than 1,100 people have been arrested since the protests started. On the day Lam announced the bill's withdrawal, Hong Kong's leading measure of stock prices rose nearly 4%, possibly a good sign from the business community. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Paul Hildreth looked at images from security cameras set up at schools in Fulton County, Georgia. He began watching a video of a woman walking inside one of the school buildings. The top of her clothing was bright yellow. Hildreth used his computer's artificial intelligence, or AI, system to find other images of the woman. The system put the pictures together in a video that showed where she currently was, where she had been, and what she was doing. There was no security threat, but the short demonstration for the Associated Press showed what is possible with AI-powered cameras. Hildreth is Emergency Operations Coordinator for the Fulton County School District. If a gunman were to enter one of his schools, he says, the cameras could identify the shooter's position and movements, helping police to end the threat quickly. AI is helping to change security cameras from passive to active observers. They can identify people, suspicious behavior, and guns, and gather large amounts of information. The images show what people are wearing, how they walk, and other physical mannerisms. If the cameras capture an image of someone who is banned from a building, the system can immediately inform school officials if the person returns. At a time when the threat of a mass shooting is ever present, school officials are among the biggest supporters of the technology. Police, businesses, and big companies are also using what is being called intelligent video. Yet many civil liberties groups express concerns about a threat to privacy.
In early 2018, an expelled student killed 17 people at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. A year later, Broward County, which includes Parkland, set up cameras from the Canadian-based company Avigilon throughout its school district. Hildreth School District in Georgia will spend $16.5 million to put the cameras in about 100 buildings in coming years. The Greeley, Colorado School District has used Avigilon cameras for about 5 years, and the technology is improving, said John Tate, the district's security manager. Upcoming improvements include the ability to identify guns and read people's expressions, something not currently part of Avigilon's systems. It's almost kind of scary, Tate said. It will look at the expressions on people's faces and their mannerisms and be able to tell if they look violent.
It is hard to say how many schools have AI-equipped cameras because no one is collecting those numbers. Michael Dorn is head of Safe Havens International, a nonprofit that advises schools on security. He notes that quite a few schools use Avigilon and Sweden-based Axis Communications equipment, and the feedback has been very good. Schools are the largest market for video surveillance systems in the United States. The U.S. market was worth an estimated $450 million in 2018, notes HIS Market, a London-based data and information services company. AI cameras have also been tested by companies to study customers' facial expressions to identify whether they are having a good or bad shopping experience. That information comes from the Center for Democracy and Technology, a Washington nonprofit group that fights for privacy protections. Businesses can see individuals stealing products in real time and inform security or warn of a potential theft. One company, Athena Security, has cameras that recognize when someone has a weapon. And in an effort to help businesses, the company recently expanded the system to help identify big spenders when they visit a store.
Police in New York City, New Orleans, and Atlanta all use cameras with AI. In Connecticut, the Hartford Police Force has deployed about 500 cameras throughout the community. They include some AI-equipped models that can search hours of video to find people wearing a certain kind of clothing. They also can search for places where a suspicious vehicle was seen. The power of the systems has fueled privacy concerns, however. People haven't really caught up to how broad and deep the technology can go, says Jay Stanley, a policy expert at the American Civil Liberties Union. Stanley published a research paper in June about how the cameras are being used. When I explain it, he said, people are pretty amazed and spooked. When it comes to the possibility for reducing violence, that may be less of an issue. Shannon Flonery Executive Director for Safety and Security for the Fulton County School District, said no privacy concerns have been heard there. The events of Parkland kind of changed the game, he said. We have not had any arguments or pushback right now. Facial recognition is not perfect. A study from Wake Forest University found that black faces appeared angrier than white faces in some facial recognition software programs. But the seemingly endless cycle of mass shootings is forcing Americans to see technology, untested though it may be, as a possible solution to an unending problem. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
Today on The Making of a Nation, we tell about the European settlers who established colonies in the American Northeast in the 1600s. Here is Steve Ember.
The Puritans were one of the largest groups from England to settle in the area known as Massachusetts. They began arriving in 1630. The Puritans had formed the Massachusetts Bay Company in England. The king had given the company an area of land between the Charles and Merrimack rivers. The Puritans were Protestant Christians who had split from the Anglican Church. They wanted to change the church to make it more holy, more pure in their eyes. The Puritans were able to live as they wanted in Massachusetts. Soon, they became that area's largest religious group. By 1690, 50,000 people were living in Massachusetts. Puritans thought their faith was the only true religion and that everyone should believe in it. They also believed that church leaders should lead the local government and that all people in the colony should pay to support the Puritan church. The Puritans thought it was the job of government leaders to tell people what to believe. But some people disagreed with the Puritans, who became leaders of the colony. One of those who disagreed was a Puritan minister named Roger Williams. Roger Williams believed, as all Puritans did, that other European religions were wrong. He thought the spiritual traditions of the Native Americans were wrong too, but he did not believe in trying to force others to agree with him. He thought that it was a sin to punish or kill anyone in the name of Christianity, and he thought that only members of the church should have to pay to support the church. Roger Williams began speaking and writing about his ideas. He wrote a book arguing that it was wrong to punish people for having different beliefs. Then he declared that the European settlers were stealing land that belonged to the Indians. He said the King of England had no right to let people settle on land that was not his. The Puritan leaders of the Massachusetts Bay Colony forced Roger Williams to leave the colony in 1636. He traveled south. He bought land from local Indians and started a city, Providence. The English Parliament gave him permission to establish a new colony, Rhode Island, with Providence as its capital. As a colony, Rhode Island accepted people of all religious beliefs, including Catholics, Quakers, Jews, and even people who did not believe in God. Roger Williams also believed that governments should have no connection to a church. This idea of separating church and state was new. Later, it would become one of the most important of all the governing principles of American democracy. Other colonies were started by people who left Massachusetts to seek land. One of those colonies was Connecticut. A group led by a Puritan minister named Thomas Hooker left Boston in 1636. They moved inland and settled near the Connecticut River. Others soon joined them. Other groups from Massachusetts traveled north to find new homes. The King of England had given two friends a large piece of land in the north. The friends divided it. John Mason took what became the colony of New Hampshire. Ferdinando Gorgas took the area that later became the state of Maine. Maine was never a colony. It remained a part of Massachusetts until the United States was established in 1776. The area that became New York State was settled by the Dutch. They called it New Netherland. Their home country, the Netherlands, was a great power with colonies all over the world. A business called the Dutch West India Company owned most of the colonies. The Dutch claimed American land because of explorations by Henry Hudson, an Englishman working for the Netherlands. The land the Dutch claimed was between the areas settled by the Puritans in the north and the Anglican tobacco farmers in the south. The Dutch were not interested in settling the territory. Instead, they wanted to earn money. The Dutch West India Company built trading posts on the rivers claimed by the Netherlands. Indians brought animal skins to these posts for use in making goods for buyers back in Europe. In 1626, the Dutch West India Company bought two islands from the local Indians. The islands were Manhattan and Long Island. The Dutch paid for Manhattan with goods worth only about $24. The Dutch West India Company tried to find people to settle in America, but few Dutch wanted to leave Europe. So the colony welcomed people from other colonies and other countries. These people built a town on Manhattan Island. They called it New Amsterdam. It was soon full of people who had arrived on ships from faraway places. Up until this time, the population was mostly Dutch and British, but now one could hear as many as 18 different languages spoken in New Amsterdam. In 1655, the governor of New Netherland took control of a nearby Swedish colony on Delaware Bay. 9 years later, the English did the same to the Dutch. The English seized control of New Amsterdam and renamed it New York. That ended Dutch control of the territory that is now the states of New York, New Jersey, and Delaware. Most of the Dutch in New Amsterdam did not leave after it became New York. The English allowed everyone to stay. They let the Dutch have religious freedom. The Dutch were just not in control anymore. The Duke of York owned the area now. He was the brother of King Charles II of England. The king gave some of the land near New York to two of his friends. Sir George Carteret and Lord John Berkeley established a colony. They called it New Jersey, after the English island where Carteret was born. The two men wrote a plan of government for their colony. It created an assembly that represented the settlers. It provided for freedom of religion. Men could vote in New Jersey, whatever their religion. Soon, people from all parts of Europe were living in New Jersey. Then King Charles took control of the area. He sent a royal governor to rule. But the colonists were still allowed to make their own laws through their elected assembly. The King of England did the same in each colony he controlled. He collected taxes from the people who lived there, but allowed them to govern themselves. One religious group that was not welcome in England was the Quakers. Quakers called themselves Friends. They believe that everyone has an inner light that leads them to God. Quakers believe they do not need a religious leader to tell them what is right, so they had no clergy. Quakers believe that all people are equal. The Quakers in England refused to recognize the king as more important than anyone else. They also refused to pay taxes to support the Anglican Church. Quakers believe that killing is always wrong, so they would not fight, even when they were forced to join the army. They also refused to promise their loyalty to a king, or a government, or a flag, only to God. For all these reasons, the English did not like the Quakers. Many Quakers wanted to leave England, but they were not welcome in most of the American colonies. One Quaker found a solution. His name was William Penn. William Penn was not born a Quaker. He became one as a young man. His father was an Anglican and a good friend of the king. King Charles borrowed money from William's father. When his father died, William Penn asked that the debt be paid with land in America. In 1681, the king gave William Penn land, which the king's council named Pennsylvania, meaning Penn's Woods in Latin. The Quakers now had their own colony. William Penn said the colony should be a place where everyone could live by Quaker ideas. That meant treating all people as equals and honoring all religions. It also meant that anyone could be elected as a leader. In most other colonies, people could believe in any religion, but they could not vote or hold office unless they were a member of the majority church. In Pennsylvania, all religions were equal.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.